What? Bucky's Auto Service Centers.
What's wrong?
16 locations. Is that enough? I say no. We need them on every block. They should be like Starbucks. Bucky's Auto Service Center is a great place to be able to get your car fixed. They're terrific people. They don't offer a chicken salad sandwich, but I'm sure they got some steel donuts and some bad coffee.
Speaking of that, where is my coffee?
There it is. Stop it!
Steel donuts.
No, stale. Did you say steel?
Yeah,
steel belted tires steel and stale donuts.
Yeah.
You know where I like to go and just sort of hang out?
Bucky's.
Bucky's for one. But Les Schwab, you know why? I love the smell of tires. I love going in there.
You get a rubber high.
It's tires and popcorn. It's like you sit there and you're like, I'm in heaven. I'm like a dog on a summer vacation with his head out the back window. I just can't get enough. And they eventually ask you to leave. But they give you. An, I say
nicely.
I'm right in this middle of this article, this good housekeeping article. So hold
maybe
on.
John would see more movies if they let him watch the movies while sitting on a pile
at
of tires.
Yeah.
They've already got the popcorn.
Yeah. Tires. All right, here we go. Are you with me on that, Andrew?
I can dig it.
All right, there we are. Amazon is on the verge. It looks like they are. They're going to buy the building. They don't like to lease. They like to buy. They want to own. In fact, the Expedia building, which is down the street from the building they're going to buy, they have, what, how many employees they got in there? Like 2,000?
2,000.
When Expedia moves out of there, they're apparently going to take over that whole building. I assume they'll end up buying that entire building as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. So Expedia is moving from Bellevue to Seattle, and now Amazon, they're not moving by uprooting from Seattle, but they are expanding into Bellevue.
So everybody's thinking, ooh, is this because you're not doing New York? You're going to bring people here? Cairo 7.
Just days after Amazon eliminated a major expansion in New York City, it looks like the East Side is going to benefit. According to the Puget Sound Business Journal, Amazon put down non-refundable earnest money to buy Bellevue Corporate Plaza on 108th Avenue Northeast.
If they take it, that could likely be upwards of 8,000.
Matthew Gardner is the chief economist for Windermere Real Estate.
Amazon as a company don't like to take partial buildings anymore. They can occupy somewhere. It's going to be the whole thing.
The 10-story building is strategically located two blocks from the Expedia building, which already houses more than 2,000 Amazon employees.
There you are.
With plans to take over the rest of the building when Expedia leaves.
What's interesting about Bellevue is its proximity, but also it is, one can argue, somewhat more business-friendly, at least than we've seen relative to Seattle. Hmm. The sales head tax, I think when Amazon actually essentially down tools on a lot of their new development, that was a fairly significant shot across the bows for City Hall.
Access to transit and light rail on the way.
Is it shot across the bows or bow?
Bow.
You only have one bow. Bows would be like that would be your bowels.
Your bows.
You're going to shot across your intestines. Here we go.
Make downtown Bellevue more attractive.
So I think the benefits, the net benefits of Amazon moving into any market, and certainly if we look at Bellevue, it's going to be increasing consumer spending. It's going to help in terms of occupancy and rental rates on the apartment side, likely to push up even further home prices potentially over time.
There you go.
See, and the key to that, John, was future access to light rail.
Right. They like that. And they like the fact that this building is right next to the bus.
Yeah, I know.
Right next to the bus line.
Transportation issues actually are playing into it.
Yeah, pretty smart. So because they realize that some of their workers don't want to own a car, but they probably have one over there. The question is this in reaction to? Is this in reaction to the anti-business mood in Seattle that Amazon wants to go to Bellevue? And if don't forget, wherever Amazon goes, a whole bunch of other businesses follow. So it seems like, and I read an article in 1890 in Tacoma, and the combination of what was it like in 1890 in Tacoma and what was it like in Seattle? Like, why did Seattle steal Tacoma? Because wasn't Tacoma supposed to be the city of the future? Isn't what they called themselves or something like that?
They originally thought they would be the preeminent town.
I think they were the first to have railroad there. Mm. And they had the railroad there, and Seattle was like the poor stepchild. And then what happened was about four banks failed, and there was a mild depression
in
on
Tacoma?
The upper, no, all over the upper West Coast. So you got like in parts of Oregon, I think Idaho Bank failed, Washington Banks failed as well. Four of them went under, caused a whole bunch of problems, and then people started to get mad. The populist movement was like, we don't want the rich people, we hate the rich people. And then Tacoma said, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to default on our bonds and default on our loans. Seattle started advertising, said, hey, we don't default. We treat Chinese somewhat better than you do in Tacoma. So come on down here. You know, they only let 3 Chinese people live in Tacoma. So they said, come on down here. We will respect you and you can start your business here. So that's one of the arguments that what happened was Tacoma turned anti-business. And as Tacoma turned anti-business, Seattle opened its doors and stole their future away.
Well, there's a great article in Crosscut talking about the rise and fall and rise of the East Side vis-a-vis Seattle.
Yes.
And they say, you know, it started off with Microsoft. Microsoft decided to ensconce themselves on the East Side, and it became, the idea was they created this perfect campus.
Right.
It was like, oh my God, it's like being back in college, and it attracted all these young kids who wanted to be on the cutting edge of technology. They all flooded to the East Side. Then, as gradually, as Microsoft kind of dimmed and Amazon rose at the time where they didn't want these kind of campus parkway parks. Mm-hmm. What they basically wanted was an urban environment, and so Amazon, being the next step, centered themselves in an urban environment like Seattle, because that's where all these young millennials want to flock into the urban environment. And they say now, at this point, now that Amazon has taken control of whatever it is, like 30% of downtown Seattle, is there a move maybe back to the East Side? Because they say Microsoft has kind of gotten its act together and starting a resurgence. Now, it's hard to argue that Amazon isn't booming as well, but they say this might reflect a move back toward the East Side as being a legitimate a place for business to go.
Yes.
They say that the head tax, hassle here in Seattle, the deemed anti-business stance of the Seattle City Council,
right.
In addition to issues like homelessness, which has not been addressed, the Seattle Public Schools are not considered as strong as the East Side, that there are some kind of urban problems now that Seattle's dealing with that, to be fair, in this article, they'd say Bellevue has as big a homeless problem as Seattle does for their size, and that there are some similar kinds of issues. But still, it might be seen as a refuge for downtown Seattle business people like Amazon to move out.
Well, capital is liquid, right? You can go where you want and where you feel that you're appreciated. And if you feel you want to go to Bellevue because you might have a better chance of not having people tell you that you're a horrible person or you're an awful organization or that you are the devil because you're the richest man in the world, screw you, Seattle. I like the fact that Amazon's done this. Hopefully this is just the beginning.
Okay.
Well, hold on.
Okay.
Believe me, it would be the totally different story if Amazon was coming and adding more into Seattle. Look at this. They want to feel that they want to be part of it. I'd like to watch this number. When they bring the people in and the prices start to go up on the houses, there's 328 homeless people in Bellevue. So let's see.
True.
It is.
Literally?
Oh, yeah. So that was the count.
You
I looked
have a
it
number?
Up. 2002,
okay.
In 2018.
I thought you were trying to be funny.
No,
okay,
328.
Okay.
Let's see how that number goes up. Because don't forget, when Amazon came in, it was one of the causes of homelessness in Seattle. So let's see it happen. Because then we're going to see it happen in Bellevue, right?
Well, the thing is, there's homelessness in Bellevue, and it's not being addressed. That's one of the reasons why we have
all 300
King County.
Not being addressed. I mean, they're not spending money on it.
Yeah, the idea is that's why you've got King County involved, because Bellevue is part of King County, that all of the efforts of dealing with homelessness have gone through Seattle, and the rest of the county hasn't really tried to address it. And so what Dow Constantine says is that we need to spread the wealth, that it shouldn't all be on Seattle's shoulders.
Spread the debt, you mean. It's not
wealth.
Well,
whatever. I mean, the idea is
we have a wealth of homeless in Seattle.
If you're a homeless in Bellevue, you might get on the bus and come into Seattle and hang out in Seattle, because that's where all the services are.
Yeah.
And the services need to be addressed more equitably around the county, and then it wouldn't be all just up to Seattle to solve all of
King County's
problems.
So you're saying somebody, a homeless person, would get on a bus and go to Seattle?
They say because that's where the services are.
So
right,
like
now,
Idaho,
Seattle has
California,
all, well,
Oregon, Denver.
The closer
Kansas.
You are, the more apt you get here.
Yeah.
The idea, though, is that all of the problems of homelessness are dumped in Seattle, and they say, no, it really is a countywide thing, and we need to address it countywide.
Well,
but the thing is, Apple and Dropbox are still coming to Seattle. It's not like Seattle is a wasteland because of the stance here. Most of the people that still come flocking to these technology companies like the urban environment of Seattle, all of the arts that offers all the good restaurants. They say the nice thing about Eastside is that they had this dearth of good restaurants. Now the restaurant scene has perked up. But they say the thrust of the Crosscut article at the end says, basically, what's really helping Bellevue right now is that they take transportation technology seriously, and they've developed this this whole program. Cruise Automation selected Bellevue over Seattle to locate its second tech engineering office. Autonomous taxi service may not be far behind. They're actually addressing the kinds of issues that a lot of progressive cities are trying to grapple with. Bellevue is at the forefront of that, and they said bully for them.
Well, I looked up, and this is a number just to how old are people? Because what happens is when you get older and you decide you're going to get married, you have kids, you move out of Seattle and you move to the east side. Thank God for that. Because of that.
But Bellevue, Bellevue used to be a better community. I don't know if that's true anymore of Bellevue.
Well,
when people move out to the suburbs, are they thinking Bellevue?
Yeah, no, but just generally Sammamish. Come on into Sammamish.
Yeah.
We love you.
Yeah, if you're rich enough.
Well, the beauty of Sammamish is the fact since Microsoft set up there, you get so many people moving in there that make enough money that your $500,000 house is now worth $800,000 because Microsoft pays for that. So the average, this is a medium income or the medium age in for a Facebook employee is 28 years old.
Wow. Okay.
And it looks like
what's the median age in Bellevue as opposed to Seattle? That would be an interesting comparison to see.
I think Bellevue's younger.
Well, I mean, I would assume Bellevue's younger. However, because of the influx of the millennials, because of the tech country, I mean, yeah, most of the people in Seattle that own homes are probably in their 60s.
Yeah. Well, I would say that as the people get older and age out of wanting to hang out in clubs and have just indiscriminate sex with someone and possibly pick up an STD, they will leave and go to Bellevue.
You make being Bellevue? That's not far enough
with
away.
With their STDs, I might add. Well, we don't want you with your open
debt.
Sores. Says that as you drive in. All right. Boy, I took it to a dark place real fast. Am I there? All right.
Now where? Now what are we talking about?
Bernie Sanders.
Oh, yeah, Bernie Sanders.
Speaking of social diseases, Bernie Sanders announced he's running for president.
I am going to run for president.
Yes.
That's correct.
What's going to be different this time?
We're going to win. We are going to also launch what I think is unprecedented in modern American history, and that is a grassroots movement, John, to lay the groundwork for transforming the economic and political life of this country. That's what's different.
He was the guy that was screaming about 15 minimum wage. He was the one yelling about Medicare for all. He was the one doing all that stuff against Hillary. And then Hillary tried to run to the left. She couldn't keep going to the left of him. He kept going further left. He was really the grandfather, if not the great, great, great grandfather of this sort of modern day socialism. He believes it is so important to unseat Trump.
It is absolutely imperative that Donald Trump be defeated, because I think it is unacceptable and un-American, to be frank with you, that we have a president who is a pathological liar, and it gives me no pleasure to say that, but it's true. We have
being a pathological liar is American.
A president who is a racist, who is a sexist, who is a xenophobe, who is doing what no president in our lifetimes has come close to doing, and that is trying to divide us up.
No.
You know, okay, do we have more clips?
We'll get more. He says he's a lot of ideas becoming mainstream.
You will recall, you may recall that.
It's 32 seconds with him in a heavy Brooklyn accent, yes or no?
Yes.
In 2016, many of the ideas that I talked about, Medicare for all, raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour, making public colleges and universities tuition free, all of those ideas, people say, oh, Bernie, they're so radical. They are extreme. The American people just won't accept those ideas. Well, you know what's happened in over 3 years? All of those ideas and many more are now part of the political mainstream.
So you're saying the party came your way?
Well, I don't want to say that. I think most people would say that.
Yeah. Has it become mainstream?
No.
What it's become is part of the conversation.
Exactly.
Right? And people don't blush and run away from being called a progressive or a liberal
or
somebody that wants a
socialist.
Right. You got two people that are democratic socialists. So here's a crazy number for you. 50% of people, because it's supposed to get the young vote. You know, the last time the Republicans won the young people vote, young people is considered 18 to 29.
Ronald Reagan.
Yes. 1984, 1988. That's it. You haven't won since then. So, we got to get the young vote. Republicans never get the young vote. Listen to this. 50% of young people, that's 18 to 29, say that they don't believe Social Security will be there for them.
Mm-hmm.
But 60% of them, when asked, would you cut it or make any changes, they say absolutely not. Not kooky.
Okay.
All right. Good. So, Bernie's running on. What's that?
It's good while it lasts, Social Security.
You won't have it, but you're paying into it. So Bernie's going to try his stuff. I guess he will probably most likely be in the lead. He's 77 years old.
Yeah.
So people like that live forever. What's that?
He would be the oldest nominee for president if he gets there. My question for Bernie, I think, would be if imperative, as he just said, to defeat Trump, is he as the Democratic nominee, the best candidate to defeat Trump? Would he be willing, if he could win the Democratic nomination but then lose, would he think it was still worth it or not? And I think he probably would say yes, because Hillary wasn't as extreme as I was, and she lost. So if you're going to lose, you might as well go down, you know, waving the flag of aspirations, yeah, as they say. But I just think that, I don't know that he would be the most likely to defeat Trump. But that may not be as, he says it's imperative, but this concern, here's what I think a lot of Democrats feel right now. So uh-huh. There are a lot of good people out there. They don't care which one, as long as they beat Trump. I mean, I think that's what's, you know, what is most imperative to most Democrats.
You don't care about the policies.
At this point, because they're so similar,
yeah,
that I figure, yeah, getting, replacing Trump with a good Democrat, whether a, you know, a centrist or a left centrist or a leftist, doesn't really matter. It's like, who would be the best person to take on Trump?
If you look at just how the things break down, since more Democrats are young, 18 to 29, they tend to vote Democratic.
But they tend not to vote, too. That's the
That does hurt
you a little bit. That's the Achilles heel of the Democrats.
Obama got 66% of them the first time he ran. He got 60% of them the next time they ran.
Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. But Bernie will get $28 donations from a whole bunch of people. He'll have tons of money. Yeah. He'll have all sorts of press. He's going to say things that the media loves, which is basically sort of a quasi-socialist idea of government control in Washington, D.C. We provide you with health care. We provide you with free college. We start to work towards a green economy. He's going to push all these things. And we're going to tax the rich, and we're going to get corrupt, greedy corporations out of Washington.
But he was the only one speaking that when he was running against Hillary. Now there are four or five at least,
right,
that are saying the same thing. So the question is he going to be seen as like an old face? Like Hillary Clinton, if she ran right now, there'd still be some support for her, but people say, yeah, but that was last go around. Is Bernie Sanders going to say, yeah, Bernie Sanders, that's great. You are the father of our movement, but we prefer a younger face, a fresher face, not a younger necessarily, a fresher face.
He got screwed by the DNC. A lot of people will tell you that they screwed him over. They screwed him over in Washington with the caucuses and hell of a sense of going. DNC was in bed with Hillary. They were sending the questions to CNN. CNN was sending them to Hillary.
It didn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
It is true that
they have emails that show that they don't want Bernie in there.
Yes, but look at how close he got. They didn't stop him.
They did what they could to make sure that Bernie was not part of the conversation. They were embarrassed by him. They needed Hillary to be able to be coronated.
The idea was that Hillary was the safer bet than Bernie. Now, I know a lot of Bernie supporters, a lot of friends of mine think that if Bernie was the standard bearer, that he would have won. Uh-huh. I have my doubts about that, but they have a good argument since my candidate Hillary lost, you can try it with Bernie. I just don't know that Bernie's going to stand out enough unless he's seen as he deserves it. Kamala Harris, everything you're saying is basically what Bernie said 4 years ago, so let's give it to Bernie instead of you.
I say
Elizabeth Warren for that matter.
Harris, if she carries the same stuff that Bernie does, she's black and she's female, she gets more points than Bernie. Bernie can't run against her.
How about Elizabeth Warren, though? Elizabeth Warren is the one who's seen as basically...
She's a minority, too. She's a Native American, and so she's also a female and a Native American. But she gets two bad.
But she did not run last time. Most of the support that Bernie Sanders had would have gone to Elizabeth Warren if she had run last time. So the question is now he going to split the vote with Elizabeth Warren and kill both their campaigns?
Exciting news, Tom, but we'll be here covering it, giving our opinion as needed.
I can't wait. The first debate's scheduled for June.
You're kidding.
Oh, just a few months away.
Hey, Rachel Bell's going to swing in. We'll talk about the fact that now you can get an expert for everything. And the fact that more and more people, these millennials, are consuming more of this, and it's better for society.
I think.
I don't.
Good for millennials.
They're bad for me. We'll be right back. There we go. Quiet, Tom. It's part of our thing now. Transition. Rachel Bell joins us.
You got some
Lisa
moves.
Lisa Brooks couldn't get out of here fast enough. What's that?
That was funky.
That's my thing. That's what I do.
Yeah. A lot of gyrating today.
I'm not afraid to shape my moneymaker.
Is that what we call it?
That's what John calls it. Mr. Moneymaker to you.
Okay. Rachel Bell was complaining. You know, we pick her up. There she is. She's washed up on the shores of Cairo Radio. We save her.
We rescue her from oblivion.
We, yes. She's not just working on a podcast. And we give her an assignment. And basically, it was a test.
Yeah.
Not going to lie to you.
What was the assignment? Dancing with you or coming on and talking on the radio?
No. The assignment was, Jacob sent you the article. We just want to see if you'd read through all 33 pages.
I read this whole... I texted him. I was like, what is happening? It took me 4 to 5 hours to read that article. I mean, I'm glad that investigative journalism is still happening in one place, but right. Whoa, I had to set my alarm early this morning to read it.
Unfair, we sent it to in Latin, so you had to transcribe yes. everything through a cut yes. and paste. But you got it. You got through. And the topic has to do with the sommelier for everything. Normally, people think of a sommelier as you go into a...
Wait a minute. I've never heard anyone pronounce it that way. I thought it was a sommelier.
Sommelier.
Sommelier. Don't worry about John's pronunciation.
Okay. I just want other people to be able to understand the show.
I'm sorry.
There's no way.
I only sell more wine at charity auctions than right. anyone else in the United States.
Without knowing what
sommelier.
Wine is.
Sommelier.
Okay.
You go into a fancy restaurant and the wine guy comes over yeah. and walks you through the type of wine that he would like or she would like to introduce you to. To become a sommelier. I think that's right.
Sommelier.
You have to take all sorts of tests. And have you ever seen what the final test is and how they have to determine the wines? It's
no.
crazy, right? Jacob's seen it. It's wild. They put the wines down and they don't tell you anything. And you're tasting the wine, smelling the wine, and you're locating it to a part of the country, part of the world. Then you're tasting it again to determine what age they believe it is. And they got to narrow it down and say, I believe this is a Chardonnay from... The Russian Pinot from the Russian River, and it's anywhere between 2003 2004. It's wild to watch them do it. So the expertise of something like that in wine is now an expertise in just about everything.
Yeah, that's right. There was an article in Washington Post magazine about how there are now sommeliers. That is actually how you pronounce it. Thank you very much. I am a food professional. Not just in wine, but for mustard, honey, hot sauce, cigars, chocolate. Honey? Did I say honey? I think I said honey already. But you could easily read an article like this and dismiss it and just say, oh, people love to make fun of wine snobs who say, I taste a bit of donkey tail and a little peat moss, and this reminds me of my daughter's foot at age 4. But it's actually kind of cool because I'm reading a book right now by Michael Pollan called Cooked. And in the foreword, there was something that really struck me that I've been thinking about a lot, which is the fact that we've allowed companies to tell us that we can't do anything and they get to have to cook everything for us. So for example, bread baking, cheese making, beer brewing, these are all viewed as like extreme cooking projects where people used to do this at home all the time. But we've been told by our culture that these things are too hard. Just go out and buy bread. And what you do is kind of give up a lot. You give up, you know, knowing where the ingredients came from. You give up this knowledge. So I think that it's cool that people are going very, very, very deep into understanding, you know, even the science of honey and cheese and mustard and cider, because they're becoming experts in something else where we are only experts in the thing that we do for a living in general. That's what people are experts in. But think about it. You don't know anything about your body or your health. You can't diagnose anything past a common cold. We buy everything. We have other people change our oil. So I think that all this is doing is just tapping in to another thing that you could know about science and nature.
So is the point that we all can become sommeliers of history, of honey and foot massages if we want to? Is the idea that everybody can be their own experts, or is it the idea that now we can tap into somebody who's done an expert, you know, deep dive into honey, and now we go to that person to tell us about the honey?
Both. So okay. There's a couple of downsides if you want to go that way. One of them is that sommeliers, let's say just for wine, if they're working as a sommelier and didn't just get this for fun or to impress their friends, basically their job is to get you to buy a more expensive wine because you respect their knowledge and you say, ooh, well, he told us to get this $50 bottle mm-hmm. instead of this $30 bottle. And that's the same for all these products. The other thing is there's an idea in this article that kind of hints towards, you know, is this kind of a scam? Is this just a way to make money? So I'll tell you how much it costs to get certified in some of these fields. So there's a 2-day tea sommelier certification course through the International Tea Masters Association. 2 days, that's about $1,500 to do that. There's a 6-day olive oil sommelier class that's $2,800. And 9-day, this one's one that you can really make fun of, a water sommelier class. It's in Germany. It costs $2,600, plus you have to pay for your own travel. And then the cheap ones in New York for the three-day boot camp at Murray's Cheese in Greenwich Village, that's $850. So it's like, what are you going to do with the certificate? Is it worth paying $2,800 to be able to say that you can taste water better than someone else?
It is the reign of the expert, that if somebody knows more than someone else, you yield to that individual. And since now, because so many people put up reviews of different things, they almost, because of the review and their opinion of it, people yield to them because they are an expert. So someone knows more about something than someone else, you will naturally yield to it. If you go to a dinner with somebody who really knows wine, you sit down, the first thing you do is you hand the wine list to that guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Because one, he then has to pay for it. And two, he knows more. Right, because you choose something and you're like, I don't know. You know that the other guy knows more.
Yeah. Right. No, I think that's great. But you started off, Rachel, by saying, hey, this is really great. Somebody's doing a deep dive into something that they're really interested in.
Yeah.
Are they doing it out of an avocation or they think of it as a vocation? They are now going to get paid for their expertise.
I can't imagine there's a big market for being a mustard sommelier. So I think maybe a couple people are able to make money. It seems like within the honey and mustard specifically, there are literally one to two people doing it for a living in this country.
So that honey's not considered a condiment, though, is it? So it's more of a condiment thing? Is that what we're looking at? Because that could be our next... You know what we do? Why don't we stay, keep you over until...
Can we do a condiment
segment
daily? Until
47, we'll talk about condiments.
I would love to do... I love condiments.
And finally... that's over. Sale
of... just getting into the segment.
She put in 4 to 5 hours of her life.
Tom!
Got plenty to talk about.
We're trying to keep people listening. You have anything else you want to add?
No, I'm boring.
No, you're not. Sale of non-alcoholic booze is on the rise.
I love this story.
Because it reveals that... younger people don't want to drink booze because they're concerned with social media.
Yeah, a lot of millennials.
That's fantastic.
And the generation below them, what are they called?
Z?
Z. Whatever. Yeah. Who cares? They're drinking less than other generations, and each generation is drinking less than the one before it.
That's
but
amazing.
I was surprised to read that people are buying non-alcoholic beer. Ew, why? Like, why don't you just drink milk or pomegranate juice or get your sommelier's license and become a water expert? I would never, ever drink when I'm not in the mood for a drink because I don't want the effects for whatever reason.
Yeah.
I never want a non-alcoholic equivalent.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Because I thought the whole idea of like getting rid of smoking, you know, you try to stop smoking, you try to wean yourself off, and so you have things that actually act like cigarettes, you know, so because you have all these nervous habits with it. If you're drinking something that looks like a beer in a can, it may at least feel
old
like...
Duels.
Yeah, old duels, all those kinds of things.
It doesn't taste... Maybe they have, like, fancy IPAs now.
Let me ask you this. Do you think it's a good thing that people are drinking less because they're concerned with social media?
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
The answer is no. Let me tell you why. What they're concerned about is being socially shamed.
Yes.
But they don't, right. But you know
That's
what?
Good.
Don't shame me. But judging me. So if I want to get really drunk on tequila and throw
drive
up,
and kill somebody,
no,
I should have the right to do it.
No, that's because I killed somebody. If I want to drink and vomit on my own clothes, I'm allowed to. If, as long as it doesn't get anything
shame.
On. Shame. Oh,
shame.
Oh, yeah.
Shame.
Oh, let's all judge this person by our standards of what's the behavior that's okay or not.
No.
It's sad that people are cratering to these people.
No,
I think it's
social
also
media.
For teens, though, because this is the way your parents would find out. So, like, when we were teens, we can get away with it. They'd have to smell you or see you or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, like, teenagers probably are afraid of, like, a video going up on Facebook and their parents
saying
it.
I think it's good that society's decided that if you're a smoker, you're kind of a loser. Now, there are still cool, you know, clubs, cliques that think that's cool, but mostly we've decided that that is an ugly look. The same thing with drunks. People used to drink a lot more, and my parents' generation drank a lot, and it was not an issue. Now we actually see it as it has societal impacts, and it's good that we drink less.
So we can shame people into having better behavior.
Societal shaming, yes, it's probably a good thing if it's a good behavior that we're trying to adopt.
What's good behavior? What's bad behavior?
Well, the thing is, if it's
I have a right to do whatever I want to do to my body.
Right.
But society coming along and all of a sudden saying, well, these are the standards, these are the mores by which we behave,
Yes, they're standards, but they're not laws,
by the way,
regulations.
You guys, hold on yourself. Save it for condiment talk.
pronounce the word sommelier.
Well, you just told them how to say it.
No, I didn't.
Sommelier.
Oh, that's weird. That's
sommelier.
That's right. That's how you say it.
That's what I said.
No, you did not.
You put an N in it. You said
we can pull your sound of you saying it incorrectly.
Jacob, pull the tape.
Pull the tape.
We don't
John, you're not going to survive this.
I will.
I'm protecting you. No, you gave it like
sommelier.
Four. You added an N.
Say
there.
It again.
You
had, no.
You
no.
Added, it was yeah. Somnambulism. That's
when
what
you were
said.
Done. It was a very high travel point for.
But now I'm glad. Sommelier.
Nope. Is she taking over my job now that I'm in trouble? Is she going to do condiment
you know
talk?
Why? She's shorter, but she doesn't read as
go.
Well.
Andrew's saying get out. Bye.
Bye.
Online Trading Academy text line 98973, 98973. Good way to get to us. Come through the text line. You can also come on in through mynorthwest.com and, of course, our Facebook page. Rich is back to talk about mustard and relish. She's come running in here. Wait!
Yeah! Start without me.
Steven Spielberg, this is not the first time he said this, is it?
No, a year ago he said something similar, and now he's getting another award, and so he's... repeating himself more grandiose talk.
Contributions we can make as filmmakers is to give audiences the motion picture theatrical experience.
He's about to compare things made for television and things made for the theater.
I'm a firm believer that movie theaters need to be around forever. And I love television. I love the opportunities. Some of the greatest writing is being done today for television. Some of the best directing for television. Some of the best performances on television today. The sound is better in homes more than it ever has been in history. But there is nothing like going to a big, dark theater with people you've never met before and having experience wash over you.
I think that's true. I think the experience of seeing a movie in a movie theater is distinct. However, there are two problems that he's presented. One is that he bemoans the fact, even though he, in a lot of ways, is partly responsible for this, that we now have tentpole movies, that we could get to a future where we have nothing but tentpole movies. And these are these big blockbuster kind of special effects movies, like the Marvel movies and all of that, and that it's really squeezing out the space for smaller films. Well, the place where smaller films can prosper are in these kind of streaming situations. And so his objection to the fact that, well, you've got to see things in a theater, that may be true for these big blockbuster movies, but if that's all we're seeing in the theaters of these big kind of movies, then where are these small movies going to be? Where's the real artistry in some of these films? Where are they going to prosper? Well, Netflix is the kind of place that he sees as the enemy that really is a positive. Right now, the reason this is getting so much attention is right now the front runner for Best Picture Oscar is Roma. Roma is not only a Mexican film with Spanish subtitles and in black and white. It's a Netflix paid-for film. It could be the first film ever given to somebody, not one of the major studios, to a streaming service. And because of that, there's a lot of upset in the Hollywood community.
Do you think that people also look at the price of going to the movies, driving, parking, and then going in there and paying? I think the average 2019 is $9.03. They look at like two people go.
That seems cheap.
Seems cheap.
Oh yeah, only $9. I mean, ticket prices are like $12 and $15 now.
I was shocked to see even $9. I thought it was $4.
That was the last time. It was the last time you went to a movie theater.
Rocky III.
Exactly. How'd that turn out? Oh yeah, Rocky I.
I'm waiting for Rocky 21. He's in training for a bowel movement. We have time for Barry Diller or not?
I don't think so.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway,
He keeps saying this.
Yeah, and because he makes movies for the big screen, and it's too bad you miss on the big screen. By the way, you can see Roma on a big screen. It did get a movie release, but most of us are going to watch it on TV because most of us watch everything on TV now.
That's right.
It's not the end of the world.
He wants them to be around forever.
Yeah, that's right. I think they will be, but they'll be like vinyl. They're a niche that'll see a resurgence at some point.
We'll be back. Good stories, guys.